This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 8:36 in the morning. I'm Shazana Mokhtar together with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. We are turning our attention to the education sector because we know that the COVID-19 pandemic has changed education forever. According to data by the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Organization, when compared to neighboring countries, Malaysia had the longest period of pandemic school closures at 42 weeks.
As compared with 20 in Brunei and fewer than 7 in Vietnam and Singapore, online learning has become inevitable, but did Malaysia pivot successfully? Or have students lost motivation and interest in pursuing their studies? What needs to be done to ensure our children have the passport to their future?
So for more on this, we speak to Shahnaz Al-Sadat, Chairperson of Leap Ed Services. Shahnaz, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Can we start with maybe a review of the year? What did we get right and where did we go wrong when it came to online home-based learning, which took up the majority of the year?
This is kind of like the stars and wishes question. Well, the stars are probably around two things. One is around innovation and the other is around borderless learning. Some school leaders and teachers, just warranted by the situation, you know, had to innovate in order to address learning environment for their kids. And I think very specific examples I could give around our network is, for example, like our schools in Lembah Subang, you know, knew that if they didn't do anything different with how to deliver, they would lose probably quite a lot of their students, because quite a high number of their students actually come from the PPRT community. And, you know, there are a lot of pressure on their parents, right, on the economic pressure due to the pandemic. So they started using hydroponic farming and fish rearing, you know, in the monsoon drain as part of their project-based learning. So, you know, they get the students to continuously be engaged as well as actually generate income for the families. We're very proud with Trust Schools, actually, because as you know, we've had with the partner Yayasan AMI has been working trying to make government schools a school of choice. So there are 94 schools all around, almost all states, and 63 of these 94 schools have actually achieved a sustainable transformation standards. And most of half of them actually achieved them during this pandemic. So the stars I would give to them is that because there was probably a couple of months of being frozenness. But after that, I think they didn't break their stride. They continuously to innovate, make sure the positive learning environment continued, all students are engaged, and present, you know, innovatively the evidences of this continuous learning, because they wouldn't have achieved the standards if they didn't. The wishes, I would have loved to see more strategic planning at a systemic and a systematic level, because, you know, 94 schools out of 10,000 schools, because I think we could have done a lot more if we are more coordinated and collaborative.
So what must we do to get this lost generation of children back on academic track then?
Being realist, in a country that I think has among the highest of school physical closure, and I have to emphasize physical because we didn't really close schools, we closed the physical part of it. There is actually an impact in a big of number of kids in terms of disengagement, either because there was lack of device and connectivity. And also, I honestly think we didn't shift our culture enough to student-driven, independent learner kind of environment. You know, there are a lot of people working on student recovery programs. Teach for Malaysia is one. There are a lot of others as well. Rakan Tutor, I think GSL, that's actually working the student recovery. If we could actually again coordinate and actually identify, so the 10,000 schools in Malaysia, let's do a heat map and see where actually areas that's actually requiring help. And then we can, you know, get everybody to use their strengths to help different parts where it's actually needed. The other thing is that I'm hoping that we are not going to lose the inertia of our children being in the digital world. Before pandemic, there's a bit of a deprivation kind of culture. But actually, you know, it's useless because the kids get exposed anyway when they go home or even when they're talking to friends and all that. So today, we had no choice, right? But for digital devices, we seem to be happily giving them devices. But we are not actually making sure that they actually have a license to navigate the digital world. You know, if you give them a device and you don't even invest in making sure that they actually have a license. I wish we will do this more in the coming years because digital world is really the way people are going to live. So I think we should skill our children to be good digital citizens. And the way to do it, I think, is not just to give the hardware. The way to recover, I think, is to encourage the kids to continue to be in digital world, just that to make sure that they are also ready for it.
This year, the Ministry of Education announced a one-off recruitment exercise of 18,000 teachers. Do you think this will work in addressing the shortage of teachers?
Well, we have 400,000 teachers, roughly. Not a big number. I'm not privy to how strategically that has actually been decided to be a priority. I think quick skilling the 400,000 teachers, I think, is much more a priority. So 18,000 is what they think they need in order to address the situation. Because for me, a recovery is not going to be a permanent thing. So Minister, he should be trying to use more of these the NGOs and all that that can actually help him over just the bump up time. But the other bit in the execution of this 18,000 is kind of curious for me because it takes them 3 to 5 years to train new teachers. I could imagine this 18,000 need is because of right now, right? In terms of trying to get new talent into the system and to be able to take care of this immediate period, I would have thought that they would actually reach out to people who've done this over and over again last 10 years, like Teach for Malaysia, but they didn't. In fact, we offered to help them now in the training, but it's an afterthought. So I'm just curious, like, how would they think an 18,000 a person that has been brought into a school can immediately have the level of teaching skills that is able to address a situation of loss? We already have 400,000 teachers, which we just need to quick skill them to be able to address the current situation, right? Because you are getting varying learning losses. And then how to then still improve the delivery, which is required anyway, with or without pandemic. If we had focused all our resources and thought around that, I think that would have been beneficial. The 18,000 will be useful, not that it won't, but I'm curious to see how is that going to get executed in terms of quality.
With the Education Ministry receiving the largest allocation in Budget 2022 of about 53 million ringgit, which areas do you think the government needs to focus on?
It's kind of interesting, actually. So I love the headlines, right? Largest allocation to the Ministry of Education to show that, despite all the other priorities, Malaysia is still giving priority to education, which has already been the case last decade. But all these 52 billion, 80%, I think, goes to emoluments. Okay, so that is the salaries of the teachers and the district officers and the state officers and the MOE officers. If they do not want to spend in upskilling these people, actually, it's a sunk cost. 80% is about 40 billion. Even they take 1% of that and just quick skill these people to be able to address the situation, I think they will get a lot returns for their buck, right? Because existingly, they're already paying salaries, but they have to upskill. Second, I think around student engagement, I know people are quick to say then just up the digital, but Ministry of Education has been investing already on a lot of digital platforms and digital tools and all that. But level of engagement is still relatively low. So I don't think throwing any more hardware investment going to change that. I think we have to focus on change management and we have to invest in that, which I think we always so reluctant to do that because the change management means a lot of people in the whole system has to change in terms of their mindset, in terms of how they behave, in terms of how they engage. And that's not an easy thing to do. So upskilling to address the situation, especially with AFL, Assessment for Learning and Differentiation. Because if you do students' program, you don't address the teachers. The teachers has a much longer multiplier effect of life, I guess, in terms of impact. And then from a student engagement perspective, there are already a lot of digital platforms. Consolidate them, invest in change management.
Shanas, how do you think the education sector will look like in 2022?
It's going to be interesting because I think in terms of needs, it's quite a high need area, right? From a recovery perspective, the funny thing about education is that people wouldn't feel the impact like immediately. But, we are going to start seeing the impact 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, especially if you start seeing unskilled workers coming out. Kids are dropping out or kids are getting, disengaged or not motivated. Needs are there. So the question is that, are we going to be able to match resources? I think for us is, we need to focus on just creating the largest impact possible we could. And we really want to rally around. First of all, I have to give credit to all our current partners, you know, all these years and continue to actually do, you know, great work around this area. So when CSR money are getting shrunk, I think it's more important, therefore, that you actually use the money less about development, but I think less about just getting it delivered. Use tried and tested methodology. And I think that's what we offer on the ground. Regardless of the fact that I actually appreciate that there are other priorities right now, like health. And now, you know, with the flood and issue, resiliency of community has come into the forefront. In fact, in the education right now, our biggest challenge, or what's coming visible, is around mental health. And I think we've been working with UNICEF to actually develop a program for novice teachers to actually address this. But for us, I think, how do you then give them the knowledge and the strategies to actually identify and address in their students, their children? I think that's another area, mental health. I think the sector kind of has to broaden its view a little bit and maybe not look at narrowly just doing academic, but really addressing what are the social pressures and issues that's currently making, you know, learning is being affected. It'll be interesting times. I don't think there's ever been not interesting time in the education sector, just different interests.
Shahnaz, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Shahnaz Al-Sadat, chairperson of Leap Ed Services, talking to us about how education has evolved during this pandemic and the kinds of priorities that need to be looked at in the coming year and beyond.
Yeah, which is actually the subject of our poll this morning we're running on Twitter. And we asked you, what is the next biggest challenge for the education sector in 2022? And we gave basically three options with an others, which is the fourth. But overwhelming, well, actually, it's kind of evenly split between lost school years, which is at 46%, and outdated syllabus at 41%, with only 12% saying it's the digital divide.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, actually, with the lost school years, as you said, right, for Malaysia. We've had the longest years out of
school.
Out of school.
Physical school.
And you can see that, I think, in the child's development, especially when they're at the younger age, right? So I think that's why it's a very pressing concern. Outdated syllabus is a very long-standing issue, isn't it?
It's a structural one.
It's a structural one that even took place or was an issue even before the pandemic.
And I think that's related to the fact that, you know, there's always been this, are we training people for future jobs? Are we giving them the right education so that they can get better better paying jobs?
And all these issues need to be dealt with concurrently. You can't look at one issue and ignore the others that are happening. So let's hope for more policy discussions on education moving forward. It's a long-term issue that needs to be addressed for sure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.